This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 3rd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 319. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, from the Rocky Mountaineer Station to the International Space Station. Space Explorers, the Infinite Virtual Reality Exhibits playing now until mid-January in Vancouver. My guest is filmmaker Felix Lajeunesse. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
It is the most rawly human that I've ever felt.
Okay, this is happening. We're really going to space.
Want to go to space? Well, even to spend a few minutes there, it'll cost you upwards of $250,000. But what if I told you that you could experience the next best thing for just $50 at a train station? I'm not pulling your leg. Space Explorers The Infinite is a virtual reality experience, and it's on now at the Rocky Mountaineer Station in Vancouver's Falls Creek Flats. You get there, you don Oculus virtual reality goggles, and you go on a tour of the International Space Station. Get up close with astronauts in their weightless workplace, hear them tell you about their out-of-this-world workday, and then you go for a walk in space. Montreal's Felix and Paul Studios partnered with NASA to make Space Explorers The Infinite. I spoke with director Felix Lajeunesse after I experienced the exhibit at the Rocky Mountaineer Station.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
How long did this project take to put together?
It took many years to produce this project. We started a relationship with NASA in 2016. So we did, initial filming on Earth with, the new generation of astronauts at NASA for 2 years. And that prepared the terrain to sort of go towards what we wanted to do next. And that was sending VR cameras to the space station to document life in space, life in orbit. And so we built and sent to space 2 VR cameras in 2018. And we filmed for about 2.5 years inside of the International Space Station with basically all the crew members that were there during the course of 6 NASA expeditions over almost 3 years. And that culminated with the filming of all of the exterior scenes that you see here. So we actually sent a different camera to space at the very end of that 3-year production cycle. That camera was attached to Canadarm2, the robotic arm of the space station. And we moved the camera all around the ISS to capture everything that you see outside of the ISS in the show, including the spacewalk. So we brought all of that back down to Earth, and we spent about a year creating that show, incorporating all of the virtual reality content into this large-scale interactive experience where people walk as avatars, explore a life-size reproduction of the USOS segment of the space station, and which is the main habitable area, and discover all the scenes exactly where they were filmed aboard the real ISS.
Back in the 80s, the physical Canadarm was put on tour to fairs. It came to the P&E here in Vancouver, but this, you can actually transport yourself to actually see it as it is meant to be functioning.
Yes. And what's interesting is that when you watch the spacewalk VR film at the end, when you sit down on your chair and experience the film, if you look down, you will see that you're actually hooked to Canadarm2, so you see it from a really first-person standpoint, and you really understand how it works and moving you around the International Space Station during the spacewalk operation. So it's a very immersive way to discover that piece of Canadian technology.
What were the surprises, the trial and error part of producing a film in this fashion?
I would say the main goal, which led to the main surprises, was really astronaut crew time. You know, astronauts don't go to space to make movies, at least not today. They go to space to mainly run the ISS and do a zillion ton of scientific experiments. And so when we started this project, which was a media project, a storytelling project, we wanted to capture the experience of what it's like to be there. it wasn't absolutely clear at the beginning how many hours we would get and what level of commitment we would get from the crew. All of that had to sort of be figured out in the process. And the crew really supported the project, and it turned out to be extraordinary for us because it really opened up the doors of the space station to us, I think, in a way that they never were open to any other media project before. And so we felt this overwhelming support for this project from the crew, and that led to surprises, because even though a lot of the shots were pre-planned and pre-organized and pre-approved a few weeks in advance, the astronauts, some of them decided to take the camera and film scenes of their own and bring a lot of creative input to the project, creative contribution that we welcomed, and that led to extraordinary scenes that you can see in the show. For instance, when it was Halloween, they all dressed up in costumes on board the space station. It was not something we asked, it's something that they did. They also set up dinners where they decided to have, you know, like an intimate moment with each other, and the camera was there as if it was the other person at the table. And they prepare those little delicacies, you know, that that is very unusual for them to do up in space, but they did that, you know, for the enjoyment of audiences that would watch this experience. So they really did bring a lot of creative input and contribution to this, and I think that's what makes this experience so special and unique.
You have much more footage. What will you do with the footage? Could there be a sequel to this?
Just in this show, there's about 60 scenes that people can discover. But if you come to see Space Explorers The Infinite, during the duration of the show, you will have time to see a maximum of 15 of those scenes. So you could come back 4 times to see the entire amount of content. We did that because we wanted for groups and families to come and explore the show and make it so that nobody would have the same experience. So you come out of it and say, oh, the moment that they, you know, do the science or do the spacewalk preparation is amazing. And the other person will say, well, I didn't see that, but I saw the moment that they were throwing the football at each other. And somebody else would say, well, I didn't see that, but I saw the moment that they were looking out through the cupola window at the Earth and had this very emotional conversation about their relationship to Earth. So there is already more scenes and content in the show than what people can experience in one visit. But beyond that, there's also a series that is available on the MetaQuest TV app that allows people to watch in VR edited versions of this content as part of Space Explorers, the ISS experience. And so people can access that as well if they want to have complementary content. It's available on that platform, yes.
And the VR goggles that are used, who produces those?
So the VR goggles are provided by Oculus, Meta. And so those are MetaQuest 2 headsets that have been modified to be very comfortable for a long time. So there is a compression system on the headset that doesn't come necessarily by default with the headset. So it's additional gear that we implemented to make it more comfortable. We also added to that headphones that can be adjusted for the users. That again is not default gear, it's actually equipment that we added to the gear. So we customized existing hardware basically for the benefit of the show.
The fact that you're doing it here in Vancouver in a train station, you know, transporting people from a train station through VR to the International Space Station, you know, Marshall McLuhan might have something to say about this. You know, the old 17th, 18th century technology, which this train station represents, all the way to the present and the future.
Yeah, you're right, and honestly, it was a very nice coincidence that we found this place because we don't necessarily look out for train stations. It just turned out that here in Vancouver, the kind of space we needed was that space, that train station, which is already a place to travel and a place to go to a destination. So it's perfect. It's a perfect combination to have this kind of show, which is about going to space, set inside of a physical environment like this, which is also about going places and discovering the world. So yeah, perfect match.
There's been immersive technology for decades of 3D movies, for instance, but this is going beyond that with virtual reality, and we're seeing it in different forms. I was recently in Las Vegas, the opening of the Sphere, to experience that form of immersive entertainment.
Yeah.
What is next? What are you seeing next for your next project in terms of different ways of using technology to tell stories beyond even this?
Yeah, I think you know, virtual reality as a technology is evolving. I don't see beyond virtual reality. I see virtual reality itself evolving and becoming more real, becoming more perfect from a technical standpoint, more flawless from a technical standpoint. And I mean by that the hardware, but also the capture process, how we actually generate the visuals. A show like this is a combination of real-time rendered content. So when you walk in the ISS, you see yourself as an avatar. All of that sits inside of Unreal, which is like a game engine, right? So you walk through that interactive real-time rendered ISS, but the content that you activate when you press a bubble, that is pre-rendered cinematic 3D 360 live-action content. So we already combine cinema with gaming with this show, and that makes perfect sense within virtual reality to do things like that. So we're already finding ways to evolve the language of what's possible inside of virtual reality, and I feel like we're only kind of still scratching the surface. I feel like going forward, as the technology gets better, the creative ideas also flourish and bring us to new places. And so I feel like just exploring VR, I'm gonna probably be completely invested in that creatively for the next 50 years, you know? And that's what I plan to do. You know, right now you're filming this interview with a phone. When you step out the door, you might unlock your phone from that position and call your friend, you know, and then you will see something, you're going to start taking photos, and then you will connect to the internet. And the next thing you know, you will be in your car driving with the GPS of your phone. This device today has a lot of utilities, and it's not just about watching TV shows, which you might do later on your phone. And it's for all of that reasons that mobile phones are so important in our lives now, because they give us so much functionalities, right? Virtual reality today is seen as a device for entertainment only, for gaming and for watching immersive cinematic content. If you want to have massive, sustainable at-home adoption of that technology, then I think it needs for that technology to be ubiquitous and do all of these things that a phone does today, you know? And so I'm thinking that the devices will go in that direction, where they will start to be access points to high-end entertainment, fully immersive entertainment, but beyond that, they will become your desktop computer. They will become, you know, your way to connect with people on social media. They will become your FaceTime cameras. They will do all of these things that a phone does today. I think at that moment, everybody will want them, you know, and they will just be integrated to mainstream culture, you know, and you will see them in movies, you will see them everywhere, and then they're just going to become normal, just like phones are today. So I feel like that is kind of inevitable, because if you look at it the other way around, you would say, well, then if it's not that, if it doesn't go in that direction technologically, and VR doesn't reach a form of mainstream adoption, then it means that that phone is the end of media technology evolution, right? It means that it's just going to be like better phones with like holograms, and it's going to be phones forever. It doesn't really make sense. I think the function of technology is not to remain something that is a little uncomfortable, you know, like a phone today sort of forces you to be like this, you know, to like there is something not intuitive that is not built for the human interface. And virtual reality has the pretension to be, or the aspiration to be, a technology that allows you to use your hand, to use your body, to use your senses, to use your sense of presence, your consciousness, just like you do in real life. It's a technology that aspires to disappear in a way, to sort of melt into the human interface. And in that sense, I think it's inevitable down the line. Whether people like it or not today, I think it's inevitable. I don't believe in a technological future of something like this. You know, I just don't buy it. You know? I buy it today, but I won't buy it 20 years from now.
That was virtual reality filmmaker Felix Lajeunesse. Space Explorers The Infinite is playing until mid-January at the Rocky Mountaineer Station in Vancouver. Go to theinfiniteexperience.world for more information. Podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Taiwan Mainland Affairs Council Minister slams Chinese election interference. Prosecutors investigate Chinese invitations to local Taiwanese politicians and pilgrimages. The global community and U.S. President Joe Biden might have called on Beijing not to influence Taiwan's elections, but the CCP would not be the CCP if it did not meddle, according to Minister Chu Tai-san. The presidential election is January 13th. In the Hong Kong Free Press, Hong Kong National Security Police charge man over wearing alleged seditious shirt at airport. The man was arrested on Monday at the airport and later charged with doing an act or acts with seditious intention and possessing seditious publications under the colonial-era sedition law and with having another person's identity card. Local media citing sources reported that the man was wearing a T-shirt with the phrases "Liberate Hong Kong, Revolution of Our Times," and "Hong Kong Independence is the Only Way Out" on the shirt. In the Kyoto News, Hong Kong award-winning journalist goes missing following business trip to Beijing. Minnie Chan, the South China Morning Post reporter, became unreachable after visiting Beijing to cover the Changshan Forum, a three-day international security forum that ended October 31st, said the people, mainly her friends, who were expressing their worries that Chan may be under investigation by mainland authorities. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In Coin TV, former Gresham outreach worker accused of targeting homeless faces new charges. Kevin Dahlgren faces six new charges of identity theft, official misconduct, and theft, according to documents filed November 25th. Dahlgren often spoke publicly about his efforts to assist homeless people in and around Gresham, routinely discussed the issue via social media, and made multiple television appearances, including two on Coin TV 6's Eye on the Northwest Politics. In King 5, leaked document says U.S. is willing to build energy projects in case Snake River dams are breached. The draft agreement says the government will help pay and plan for tribes in the Pacific Northwest to develop enough clean energy resources to serve as replacements. The Columbia River Basin was once the greatest salmon-producing river system in the world, with at least 16 stocks of salmon and steelhead, according to the document. But today, four are extinct and seven are listed under the Endangered Species Act. Conservationists say that dams built in the basin are primarily to blame. In the Times Colonist, BC Lions to play Red Blacks at Touchdown Pacific in Victoria. The BC Lions will meet the Ottawa Red Blacks on August 31st in what the CFL is calling Touchdown Pacific. Tickets will go on sale in March. Temporary bleachers will be brought in to increase seating to between 12,000 to 14,000 at Royal Athletic Park. Lions president Dwayne Vino said there are about 1,000 Lions season ticket holders on Vancouver Island and thousands of others who go across the strait for individual games. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone. The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week, too. It's December now, and the temporary mustaches have disappeared, but you can still donate to the Men's Health Charity. Go to Movember, that's Movember with an M, Movember.ca. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. These rich men know the rich men, Lord knows they all just want to have total control, want to know what you think, want to know what you do, and they don't think you know, but I know that you do, because your dollar ain't shit, and it's taxed to no end, because the rich men know the rich men.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. No! Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
After After 8 years, this prime minister promises nothing but a carbon-taxed lump of coal for Canadians. Will he get off the backs of Canadians so that they can enjoy beautiful gifts, maybe even a turkey and a warm meal around the Christmas table this season?
Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to point out that we're the government that's phasing out coal. The climate denialism of the Conservative Party of Canada is putting future white Christmases at risk, and that's why on this side of the House, we stand for Christmas!
Mr. Speaker, that has to be the angriest and most caustic Christmas message I've ever seen. And why doesn't he be a little less like Scrooge and a little more like Santa Claus?
A trivia footnote. December 25th is Justin Trudeau's 52nd birthday.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau. Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 3rd, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 3rd of December in 1992, the first text message was sent from a SEMA Group test engineer's computer to a colleague on the Vodafone network? Estimates from a variety of sources say that more than 23 billion texts are sent every day. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter, it's free, and get updates to your inbox. Follow The Breaker News on Twitter, also known as X, for immediate updates. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.